Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along to another edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. David Snaid is here. Hi, David.
Good afternoon. What's the story?
Shane Keegan is here as well. How are you, Shane?
Not too bad, Gav.
Feeling fresh?
Yeah, better than I had expected. Yes. Listeners, I had a wedding yesterday, so I'm a little bit ropey, but not too bad. No, not too bad.
This is the worst day too imaginable for you, so.
Yeah, it's Temple Glantine. Right in the Limerick-Kerry border.
Right.
Mental place.
Glad you're here.
David's even got a mug that says it's all good on it, just to further calm your hangover.
Dame old Dempsey.
It proved to be all good for Georgie Kelly, fresh from his magical weekend in which he scored the second goal to secure Rotherham's promotion to the Championship against Gillingham. He scored it all of 8 minutes into the debut of his club, for his club even. Glad to say that he's on the show as well. I spoke to him earlier on, so that's coming up. Really interesting interview, went places where I didn't really expect it to, so that was great. So that's coming up very shortly, but we will do some League of Ireland chat first of all, because Derry's lead at the top of the Premier Division, it's been stretched at 3 points thanks to their 4-0 battering of St Patrick's Athletic, while Shamrock Rovers were held 1 all the way to Sligo. And now things have been made even more interesting by this story that was broken by Mark McCadden in yesterday's Mirror. Lincoln City have made Stephen Bradley of Shamrock Rovers their number one target for their vacant managerial role. David, what are the odds of this happening? Do we think that this is likely?
So it's very likely now, yeah. I know from earlier on today, it was one of those situations where Bradley was obviously considering taking it and was weighing stuff up, and now obviously Lincoln have made that approach official, which, I don't know, that would seem to suggest that from their end of things, they kind of have an idea of that they have their man pretty much, you know, which seems to have been sorted relatively quickly, as Mark reported. I know it was weird, it was in the Mirror, but it's remiss of me not to say it. He is a Irish Daily Star stalwart. It's just a part of that whole Mirror. It's weird actually that it's now reached that newspaper group where the Mirror, the Irish Mirror and the Irish Daily Star now are part of one umbrella. But listen, we were talking about how would Rovers win the league and what would stop them, and I suppose something like this is a spanner in the works, and it's just an example of, and it's actually interesting, it's just an example of the good work he's done, but it kind of dovetails well a little bit about, remember we had that conversation about, well, what was about Georgie Kelly, and when he moved to Rotherham and stuff, and talking about, was it a step up, like it was a League One club, and sure, look, now he's in the Championship, and it just shows you like that, you kind of another little reminder where you are, where the League of Ireland is in the food chain, really, when certain clubs who maybe can offer other things and seem to be going well can offer. So it's I would be surprised now if this doesn't happen, just even from speaking to people, but it's not done yet, I suppose.
Do we know if it's likely whether Glenn Cronin and Stephen McPhail will go with him? Certainly Mark's story suggested that they were that Lincoln were interested in bringing everyone.
I would imagine so, but if it does happen, I think it might lead to a bit of a slightly different job title or so for Stephen McPhail, because they already have a director of football at the club, and he's kind of, that's kind of been his role a little bit, but then he also does be on the pitch and he's involved in training too, so he's a lot more hands on in that regard. But yeah, I would fully expect that the package that Lincoln have put towards and will be looking for will include at least one of his right hand men.
This is pretty big news, Shane. What's your reaction to it?
It's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. It's always been something that I've been surprised we haven't seen a little bit more of. We've seen a couple, I suppose, Stephen, Kenny, Pat Fellin go across to Scotland. There's very, very few examples that I can think of League of Ireland managers, you know, picking up jobs in the lower divisions in England. As I say, it is. I'll tell you actually, the CEO at Shrewsbury, believe it or not, there's a strange reason why there's a connection there, but I would get on reasonably well with the CEO at Shrewsbury, a guy called Brian Caldwell. And I remember a good few years back when they let their manager go, Stephen was Dundalk manager at the time. It's before Stephen got the Irish gig at all, even the 20s gig, 21s gig. And I remember firing a text to Brian Caldwell at the time and saying, listen, we've got a manager over here in the League of Ireland that's just absolutely worth you considering. And I think they did. I don't know whether there was any official approach, but I know he at that time his name was very, very much brought up at boardroom level and was kind of seriously considered. But they obviously did. I can't remember who they went with at the time now, to be honest with you. But it's something that I've always thought we should be seeing more of. You know, there are some fantastic managers over here, and if they're doing a good job over here, surely it has to catch the eye in the same way that a player doing well over here catches the eye. And I'd look, obviously, as a former League of Ireland manager, a guy who may, kind of still in the circle, you want to see somebody go across and do really, really well, because it enhances the opportunities and chances for anybody else in the league getting a similar move, you know. So fingers crossed. I think it'd be really interesting to see it happen. Be really, really interested to see how it goes. I'd love for him to make the move and for it to go really, really well.
We'll talk about the implications for Shamrock Rovers and this year's season as a whole in just a moment, but just for Bradley himself, like, Shane, what kind of opportunity is this, and are you surprised that, you know, maybe necessarily you have to leave Shamrock Rovers during the season because of the different alignment of the calendars, but are you surprised that this would happen this early?
I'm sure Shamrock Rovers fans naturally will probably jump to the conclusion that it's possibly a step backwards, and why would he when he has everything he wants and he's been so well looked after, I suppose, at Shamrock Rovers after obviously riding off that initial ropey start. But if I was in his shoes, I would find it really, really hard not to give something like that a try. I really would. You know, it's the potential. He's reached his summit here. Do you know what I mean? Where else can he go here other than into an international role, let's say, in the way that Stephen did? I think he, you know, you go across there, it seems to be a really well-run club, seems to be a club that's going places, seems to be a club that for whatever reason definitely has an eye on what's going on over here, without a doubt. There's a few more names from over here that are been bounced around over there quite a bit player-wise and that as well. So for whatever the reason is, I don't know whether there's Irish involvement at boardroom level or what's going on, but they definitely have an eye on what's going on over here. I think the other really interesting thing would be who follows him. if he goes, who follows him? And that would, you know, I'm sure Shamrock Rovers don't want to lose Stephen Bradley, but they definitely don't want to lose Stephen Bradley and 2-3 of their star players follow him, which, as we know, happens in football.
Oh, sorry, I misinterpreted your question. I thought you meant who is going to succeed him. We will get to that. Okay, so you think that there's, but it's probably natural, isn't it, that a manager would want to take players with him?
100%. Look, I'm not sure it'll be quite to the Roddy Collins levels at Carlisle, half the League of Ireland following him over, but I would be amazed. Stephen Bradley would know the ins and outs of players' contracts in the League of Ireland, not just at Shamrock Rovers, but elsewhere. And he would be aware of what potential bargains there are to get there, if there are fellas with maybe just half a season left under contract or different things like that. So I do think it'd be really, the knock-on of who would end up going across would also be an interesting spin-off from this.
And the point you make there as well, Shane, but what's next from here? Like, this is where I suppose Rovers aren't going to want to just, take this and lose a manager. I'm guessing they're going to want to put up some kind of a fight. And listen, there's serious people involved at Rovers who would be able to try and persuade Stephen Bradley to stay on. But if you're looking at it, it would be a case of trying to do something in Europe. It's probably the only thing you could say, you throw at him for this year or whatever. Say, well, listen, let's see what we can do in Europe. See, can you get into the Conference League, get into the group stages and actually progress and do well there, you know? It's probably that, and maybe going for the 3 in a row, something like that if you're appealing. But like, if he goes for the job, my instinct on this is that if Lincoln now are saying, listen, we want this approach official, my instinct on that would suggest that maybe they know that they've pretty much convinced Bradley already, maybe, or have a fair idea that, yeah, he's kind of open for that challenge. And well, you mentioned Roddy Collins. I don't think he's going to be knocking down the door at Louis Copeland before flying over to make sure he's in a nice new suit going over. But it is going to be interesting to see to see what happens. And the point you make about as well, the Irish, I had a look earlier on the board, like the CEO was a fella called Liam Scully, which, Jez, you, I don't know if this is maybe bad, but you'd be a fair bet there might be some bit of Irish in there somewhere. It has to be. But like, but yeah, I don't know, like, it's a weird one. It's kind of like, it's a shame a little bit because you hate to see someone of his caliber and what he's done with a team leave the League of Ireland. But then at the same time, like you look at some of the teams in that League One. Like the League One might not appeal, but Jesus Christ, some massive clubs there. Like Derby are going to be in there next year. Even just going through, looking at it here, like Wimbledon, obviously, well, it's the Wimbledon, I suppose. They've just been relegated, but you've got like the likes of Ipswich Town, Portsmouth, Bolton, like Plymouth Argyle. They're going to have one of what Sheffield Wednesday and Sunderland going to be in there as well. There's some massive, massive clubs of serious pedigree that are in that division, and like it does just take you to a different, especially over there, because it's a different stratosphere over in England, really. But like it just takes you to a different level, and that's just the truth of it.
The other thing, Gav, that feed into the decision making here, and it's something that as a supporter maybe, or even as the media, you tend not to think about as much is his family dynamic. You know what I thought was really, really interesting and fun. I was actually just saying it to my own wife when we were driving up this morning. The announcement around Klopp staying.
You mentioned his wife.
The reason they were staying is because my wife said so. She likes Liverpool and she wants to stay and she gets her way, he said, which was fun, you know. But what Stephen's family dynamic at the moment is in terms of whether his wife or partner or whoever would like to go across the water, what way the kids are with school, whether he intends going across and commuting back, all of that. He will have to work all of that out in his head and have those conversations at home and see does that whole part of things work for him, you know.
And because he has got a young son, and it's one of the things that stuck out actually, even though you mentioned that in my head after he won the league last year, and just loads of his family and loads of kids. I'm not sure, I think at least one of them was definitely his son, because obviously I know that, but like I think there's like I've seen nephews and all the rest of it, but it was one of the things that struck out. So it was just loads of them, and he was one of them. Like, and he was running around the pitch with his young lad and a lot of other kids just messing, like he was a being like 12-year-old. It was actually really nice to see. But there was loads of family and stuff who seemed to be there, so but yeah, so that's actually an interesting point on it as well.
Where does it leave Shamrock Rovers now?
Second in the league at the moment.
Oh, I mean, this.
Robbie.
Okay, we'll get to Robbie.
He's coming cartwheeling. Cartwheeling into the screen.
So this is a disaster for Rovers to lose Bradley during a season, but would they have planned for it? Would they have prepared for it?
But it can. I don't think it can be a disaster, Gav, because they seem to have been very, very good at tying down their players on contracts. So I assume they have done the same with the manager. So barring Stephen Bradley really throws his toys out and makes it extremely difficult for them here, if Stephen Bradley says, listen, I would be interested in going, but it's up to ye to see if he can come to an agreement. Well, now, if they come to an agreement, they come to an agreement on Rovers' terms and they benefit fantastically financially from the situation. Or if they can't come to an agreement, well, then they hold on to their manager. Like, they shouldn't. I don't see how they're in a position here that they end up, you know, extremely unhappy from the situation. Bar Stephen Bradley, you know, puts a fly in the ointment, and I don't know if he'll do that.
And it is a group of players that he's basically created as well. It's his squad, like, you know what I mean? So, like, you would imagine, I'd say there'd be a few thinking, oh, I might get a move off the back of this, within the Gooders, who'd be quite happy to stay,
yeah,
you know?
But even just, Shane, you're looking at it from like a financial point of view, but like if he does go, and it's looking like he will go, like on the pitch, like surely that's, because they have such a very specific style of play. Like I remember we talked about this ahead of the season, that Stephen Bradley made a virtue of the fact that there just wasn't the same level of churn at Rovers. They brought in a couple of players, Byrne and Andy Lyons. Byrne knew their system very well. Lyons, as we've seen, has been given a new role in it and adapted really like terrifically well. Now, like, just because they have such a very specific style of play with that three at the back, does the manager go and not massively interrupt them? Or sorry, as I say that, maybe it's the, you know, I'm not going to say this team runs itself, because it clearly doesn't, because Bradley's done a terrific job in building it. But maybe because the system of play has been so defined for so long, maybe there's not as much interruption.
Believe me, a dressing room with that much quality and that amount of egos does not run itself, that's for sure. And as I keep saying, that's the part of the job that Stephen Bradley has done fantastically. Look, I'm sure there's plenty of unrest when big names are left out, but I know we've had the odd sign of it when somebody is taken off that they, you know, they might kind of throw, I think it was a throwing the bib on the ground incident or something like that. But by and large, any unhappiness that might be there has been kept reasonably in-house, to be fair to them. And that's, I think, one of the most admirable parts of the job that he's performed. Yeah, look, I know I immediately jumped to Robbie Partey as a joke. Partey not as a joke. It is a possibility it could happen. But if you would think that they might try and keep it in-house if he was to go. So maybe, I don't know, would Stephen McPhail be tempted if he doesn't move on? And I would be surprised if Stephen McPhail did move on if Bradley went, to be honest. I think Gary Cronin absolutely would. I'd be amazed if Stephen McPhail went as well. So could he potentially be the next manager? There's quite a few big-name ex-Shamrock Rover players in their underage structure. Would they try and pull somebody through from there to take over the first team? I think that's very, very possible. But it will be a challenge. You're right. Look, no matter how much money they could potentially get for him, they still have to fill the shoes, which is not easily done. I mean, if we were having this conversation this time last year, I think it would have been an absolute no-brainer that they go all out for Keith Long. Keith's, you know, stock maybe isn't quite as high at this moment in time as it was a year ago, but I think they might try and keep it in house potentially, or it could just be Robbie and we'd have great crack with that.
Listener, if Brano might have edited that out, if he did, Shane suggested Keith Long for the role, just because there's someone still opposed that Rovers haven't tried to get yet. What about you, Dave? I mean,
I'm not going to get the job. Definitely not getting the job.
You've got your ear to the ground on this. Are we too early to hear any suggested names as replacements?
I haven't a clue. That's the truth. Haven't even checked yet. The only thing I've been checking
Keith
is...
Long, Keith Long is the new Shamrock Rovers manager and Brano is the new Hooper man.
Oh, stop. I think the next couple of days, I'd imagine stuff will either move one way or do it on it, but it'd just be interesting to see. The point Shane makes is spot on too, like in terms of what his contract... I'm trying to think of it now. I'm not 100% sure of what his contract situation is now at the moment in terms of if he has...
It was Aidan Fitzmaurice's report in the Indo this morning said that his contract was up at the end of this season.
Right, okay, so listen, if they're capable of getting money for them, possibly it might make business sense then to do it now, but just be curious to see how much Rovers try and push back against it. You would imagine they will, and if they're capable of maybe turning his head back onto the Rovers gig, if that makes sense, you know. The way things have moved so far, it would suggest that something could happen pretty soon this week, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
We've been told he's a big fan of Colin Whelan, by the way. I think there's a going to Lincoln, could see him finally get his man.
Yeah, so we think that Colin Whelan is definitely, so he will leave UCD in the summer when his studies are finished. We think that Lincoln were kind of in for him regardless of whether Bradley was appointed or not.
Yeah, well, he spent the weekend over there, and Liam Kerrigan. The two of them.
Going to Lincoln?
Well, they both went across and they were both impressed by the club. They spent a few days over there last month and they were both very, very impressed by the club and everything that they found. So, look, it's not the only option for either of the two of them, I think, but I think that's probably where... I think that's probably the favoured option at the moment. That could change, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Bradley's always talked in pretty glowing terms about both of them in the last maybe 6 months to a year. Okay, that's all very interesting. We'll have to watch that space. I think the Bradley news will probably be welcomed in Derry. I mean, Rory Higgins spoke ahead of the season that Derry weren't... It was premature to talk about title challenges and title races, but I don't think it is anymore. Even before the Bradley news, I thought the Derry were right in it. I was at that hammer and a Pats on Friday night and finished 4-0.
I was really enjoying your live tweeting of that, by the way.
Honestly, it could have been 6 or 7 and it wouldn't flatter Derry. Like, now part of it was, I couldn't believe how bad Pats were. Jesus. But Derry were outstanding. I mean, they're pressing. I mean, I haven't seen a team in Ireland press that well and force so many mistakes in quite a while. Pats played at 3 at the back. Tim Clancy didn't really explain why afterwards, just said that they believed it might cause them problems, but it certainly didn't alleviate any of the Pats' problems. They couldn't play from the back.
Who was the standout for Dirty? Who would you say was there? Or was it just a team thing?
I was probably the whole team. Probably Brandon Kavanagh, to echo what Shane's been saying for a few weeks. He was really excellent.
He's sharp, isn't he? He just does things with a punch.
He was really, really good. McGonagall was good. Dumigan was good in midfield. Patching. Actually, McElhenney. I am going to list them all. McElhenney was really good at the base midfield. It was the best I've seen from him all season.
This is what, Gadron, who used to cover Dublin when Jim Gavin was the manager. It was 5 a.m. press conferences, they used to say, and they'd ask him a question, and he'd just go through, and he'd just list every single player, because he just didn't want to focus on any one player. So, Gavin, done a good job there, fair play.
Are you surprised, Shane, to see Derry doing this well fairly early in Higgins' reign? Like, I mean, he's turned it around. They were bottom of the league or near the bottom of the league when he took over.
Not surprised in the slightest. And I don't think anybody who worked with him at Dundalk would have had any doubts whatsoever that he was going to do as well as he did. He's a terrific fella. He would have been... above anybody else, he would have been the one that I would have got closest to when I landed to Dundalk at first. My first interaction with Dundalk, believe it or not, was immediately to go on their pre-season trip to Portugal at the start of the 2020 season. I literally accepted the role kind of 3 days before they were set to go. So I landed straight out there to a group of people I'd never met. And Rory went out of his way to help me to get to know everybody and fit in. And Rory was into doing a bit of jogging at the time, and so was I. So we'd head off kind of around the complex in Portugal for a run and a jog and that. And conversations you'd have about with football with him. He's just got such a football brain. I remember Patrick McElhenney during that trip. We were chatting and Stevie O'Donnell had already, that's right, so the role came up basically because Stevie had gone to Pats. And he'd struggled a small bit kind of in that initial season. And I remember Patrick McElhenney saying to me, you know, I was chatting to Patrick one day and Patrick was saying how much he'd love to go the coaching route himself, you know, when things wrap up for him. And he says, I don't know what it takes, he says, because I see Stevie O'Donnell, he says, as a player. And I was thinking to myself, like, if anybody is made for management, it's Stevie O'Donnell. Now, as things have transpired, obviously, he had a brilliant second season, so he was right. He is cut out for management. But at the time, he was going, Patrick McElhenney was saying to me, this makes no sense to me, how Stevie O'Donnell isn't a brilliant manager, or hasn't been a brilliant manager yet, because he seems to have all the skills yet. And then he turned around and he said, and listen, he says, if Rory doesn't turn out to be a brilliant manager, we may just forget about it altogether. You know, that was kind of the line of thinking. It doesn't surprise me at all. Fantastic way with players, fantastic way with people, probably is a better way of putting it. And just such a clever fella. And look, obviously we saw it when Stephen was so quick to get him to come into his Irish setup before the Derry gig popped up, that he's so highly thought of in many different circles, you know.
Some good news for Pats. UEFA have excluded Russian clubs from European competition next season, which means Pats have been bumped up to the second qualifying round of the Europa Conference League. So they were originally in the first, but because there's now a shortfall in numbers, they've been given a bye into the second round. Elsewhere in the Premier Division, big win for Finn Harps at home to Shelburne. They're now just 2 points behind Shells in the league. Bowles 3-0 winners over UCD, and aforementioned Dundalk 4-1 winners against Drogheda. We will move on from that conversation, because what a weekend it was for Georgie Kelly. He had to wait until the final day of the League One season to make his debut for Rotherham, and then he took all of 8 minutes to make it very memorable, scoring the second goal. It was the goal that settled a 2-0 win over Gillingham and sealed Rotherham's promotion to the Championship. So let's hear from him. Georgie Kelly, how are you?
Not too bad, Gavin. How's things?
All good. Go on, take us through the moments, though. We might take it a little bit step by step. So Chidozie Akbene wins the ball back on the right wing.
These moments are really hard to recount, because you don't... it's hard to explain it to you to someone who hasn't experienced it. It's weird. It's like you don't really have any control. You don't really have any... I don't have a clear memory either of the goals. And it's the same with a lot of goals. Like, you don't... because it's pure instinct, and you know, people always talk about the flow and stuff, that you, because you're like in the moment or whatever, that you're not really, you're not thinking, and you're not like, you're, I'm not sitting thinking, right, okay, I need to finish this like this, or I need to make sure to strike it like this. It's literally just smooth, and then even the celebrations and stuff, you don't have any, like, you don't have any control, you know what I mean? It's all pure subconscious. It's mad. It's great.
So it is all a bit of a blur.
Even the rest of the game is a little bit of a blur after that, after them scenes, like.
Yeah, because you can see, there's amazing footage from behind the goal on a replay where you can see as soon as Benny wins the ball back, all of the fans in unison start pointing to you. Are you aware of that in the moment, or is it?
No, you're not at all. No, I seen that video. It's great, isn't it? Yeah, it shows how involved the fans are, like, in comparison to, you know, what you normally see with phone people videoing the whole game. But it's great. Yeah,
I suppose, like, if they had their phones out, they wouldn't be pointing. So
yeah, it's great that they're so involved.
Yeah. So you can't really remember the moment too well, but talk to me about the emotion of it afterward.
It's a little bit of relief. Like that was, I don't know if you'd been watching the game or the situation. Like, it was tense. It was real tense. Like, they needed a draw to avoid relegation, and a draw would have meant that we would have missed out on automatic promotion. So even for a game to come into on my debut, I was like, Jesus, you know. It was real tense, like, sorry, I can't forget what the question was, but it was the emotions. It was mad. I'm mostly relieved. We kind of nearly thrown that away. We had when I signed, we were flying. You know, coming up, we were cruising like top of the league there at a stage, and then we had a bit of a patch, and we lost 3 in the bounce recently. And it's trying to pick that up, but just to get over the line then for the club was massive, like, huge. Because I'm wrong here, but it's a really difficult league to get out of. I couldn't believe it, like, the standard and the size of some of the big clubs in that league, like, and the size of their budgets. And it's a testament to the staff and stuff and what they've done at this club, because ridiculous. If you go through that league and some of the stadiums, I was just going to games. And looking at some of the stadiums and the clubs, and I'm thinking, Jesus, how have a little Rotherham here, how are we flying on top of this league and pushing for promotion? But a lot of relief, I think.
You obviously took a long time to make your debut, Georgie. Was that the calf injury that you carried, well, that cut short your FAI Cup final?
Yeah, it was the same injury. It reoccurred. It was after a couple of weeks. I had just got going. I had just kind of got up and running and got my fitness up to speed. And I was close to make my debut, and just that week, the same calf went. It was frustrating, like, the timing was awful. But what can you do? And then the physios now were really cautious around, because it reoccurred. They really wanted to solve it. You know what I mean? They didn't want this issue kind of cropping up over and over again now in the coming years. So they took a little bit of extra time, which was kind of frustrating for me, because I was kind of itching to get going. Like, it's been 4 or 5 months since I played a game. But then, yeah, I got back a couple of weeks just before the end of the season. I'm trained little bits and pieces, but again, I probably didn't expect to at this late stage of the season, with things being so tense, to end up making my debut. I didn't really expect it, to be honest. So for it to turn out the way it did, and to make my debut on that occasion, like, and then to end up scoring, was a bit strange, like, but it was unreal.
I mean, was it worth the wait?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, that's so funny, strange how the way things work out. Like, and it's really weird. Like, yeah, ups and downs and how things turn. It's funny. It's a funny game. Like,
how tough was it those few months on the sideline? Because, like, you make a move. You had a long enough layoff in the winter anyway, just with the timing of the seasons. And, you know, like, there was a few clubs in for you. You went with Rotherham. I think they gave you a pretty lengthy contract and showed a lot of faith in you. Like, how tough is it then to be sitting on the sidelines and not being able to make an instant impact? Because I'm sure there'll be supporters asking, you know, we signed this guy to help us get over the line for promotion. Where is he?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And just the complete different environment and a different country, and going to a new club on your own. In January, like, I was their only signing in January, like, so it is tough, and it's not easy to kind of mix in and integrate with a new club and a new culture, like, And it was tricky, and the injury probably made it that little bit more tough. I'm studying as well at the minute, so I was trying to balance everything between moving and getting a new flat and loads of different things. And then the injury kind of topped the whole thing off. So it was tough. It definitely was, not gonna lie.
Do you doubt yourself in some moments when you're, you know, stuck on the sidelines kicking your heels?
Oh, absolutely. You do. Yeah, if you're me anyway, you do. I know some lads probably are probably a little bit more hyper confident than me, but you do, of course, doubts things in, yeah. There's still doubt. Like people now after the goal, the fans are all buzzing, thinking they've signed this whatever great goal scorer I'm trying to say, listen, you need to relax here. There's still doubt. Like I still don't know if I can play at this level.
Really?
You know, because I have a lot of work to do, and even just from training and playing alongside some of the lads, like Michael Smith, our striker there, phenomenal, unbelievable. He'll probably move on, like I imagine, in the off season. But like trying to compare yourself with him, I think I'm nowhere near it yet. Like, and I have a lot of work to do now in this off season, and that's kind of, I was looking forward to kind of getting in to the off season because I'm kind of getting stuck into the work to see where I can get to. But it's funny, the fans think that he's on his debut, he scored his goal, this is everything's perfect, like he's made it here, but it's not. I still think I'm a good bit off, like, and I still don't know if I'll make the cut, you know?
That's interesting. Do you think that doubt helps drive you to become a better player, though? I mean, it means you're certainly never resting on your laurels. Like, complacency is not going to be an issue there.
Yeah, but I think for me, it probably tips over the spectrum, the other end, where it probably hinders me a bit more than alerts. Like, I do find this interesting. Like, for a lot of players that I see that kind of go across, they have this little aura where like nothing phases them. And that's, you know, and I feel like that serves them much better. Like what I'm thinking of, one player I'm thinking of is Ronan Curtis. I played with Ronan at Derry, and nothing phased Ronan. Like he could be having the worst game, whatever, and he'd be just hyper confident and back himself, you know what I mean? People have that kind of, it's not arrogance, but it's confidence, like, and I probably don't have it. I probably lack that, like, and it's something I probably need to work on a little bit, but no, I would say it's more to my detriment than to my benefit.
How do you work on that?
I don't know, that's the $1 million question. I don't really know. I'll probably have to, don't know, I'll have to try and dig into a bit of, do a bit of reading and different bits and pieces around it. It's tricky because you don't want to, I also don't want, would be cautious of it changing who I am. Mm. You know what I mean? As a person, like I don't want to adjust my personality to try and become, you know, a little bit more arrogant or a little bit more hyper confident just because of, you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to change who I am just to try and adjust the type of player I am on the pitch.
Like, yeah, you know. I don't really want to stretch you out onto like a psychiatrist's couch here, but like how has that, you know, self-doubt affected your career, your game in the past?
Probably not as much. Like at Dundalk, I didn't have that much pressure on me. I was coming off the bench in different bits and it was, I had a little bit more freedom, you know what I mean, where it's... I didn't have to worry that much about performing as much. And then at Bowes, I had a tricky start at Bowes. Mm. But I feel like I managed it all right. I managed it fairly well. I stayed off social media. That's one tool that you can use, is you make sure not to be searching your name on social media, Jesus. But so there's different little things and you can talk, like people at Bowes, I'd be reasonably open as well. I can talk to people about me, and people know the type of player I am. And once the environment, I feel, once I fit into the environment, like there's a lot of talk recently about, like management styles and like Roy Keane there. I've seen the different bits on Twitter about, players being different now and having to manage different players, and players being essentially people caught labeling players as soft. And that's interesting to me. Like I don't know. It's an interesting debate. Like it really is. And you probably have thoughts and ideas on this as well. But I think people used to, like people used to mask who they are and this kind of macho-ness within sport. You know, this kind of tough mentality, you know, and shouting and anger and roaring. I just don't really think that it's actually needed when people are being honest and open, you know what I mean?
And is the game today, I mean, I would have certainly have a perception that the game previously would not be open to players, you know, being more open and honest and showing more vulnerability and, you know, being, in the words of some, you know, angry pundits on TV, soft. Is the game more conducive to that type of personality now, do you think, in your experience, or is it still, do you still need to be really tough to survive in a modern day dressing room?
I think it's more, it is to an extent, like, and that's partly why I've been a little bit successful. Like Bose, we were a young side, and Keith and Trev, they're obviously cautious around that. You know, players are really young and learning, and that's probably why that environment suited me, you know, when I looking back on it, like, and that's why I'd probably try, and I would, even on this move to Rotherham, like, I kind of handpicked the move based on the culture and the environment that the manager has. Like, manager here, I don't know if you've seen any of his interviews or whatever, but he's really open and honest, you know, and interested in people and psychology. Like, and that's like, I probably wouldn't be successful if you're in certain environments, you know what I mean? That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, and that's fine. Like, listen, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't want to change who I am again just to be trying to be more successful in football. That's not the point. That's not really, you wouldn't want to change your identity, you know what I mean? But it's interesting.
It's really interesting. What kind of dynamic or relationship do you need with the manager? Do you feel to create an environment in which you can thrive?
I don't like this. I don't like this kind of false facade that a lot of managers put up, like, and just that kind of arrogance, it doesn't really sit that well with me. I like honesty and openness. And like, when I signed with Rotherham, the gaffer here was literally open and honest and said that, I don't know if you're going to be successful here. Like, he says, it's very hard. He was just like openly saying this to me. Like, I don't know how well you're going to do here. I don't know if you're going to be successful. It's very hard to compare the transition and the shift from League of Ireland to this level, but we're willing to support you and give it a go. Whereas other managers will be saying, you know, oh, you can come in here and you can score 10 goals before the end of the season. You know, you can do this, you can do that. You go straight in, you know.
And were you having those conversations? Because you had loads of offers after Bose. Were you having those conversations with some clubs?
Yeah. I was having those conversations. Yeah, they were, surely. That's why I'm bringing it up. But I literally had that conversation with a couple of managers. And that's what I mean about the fit and certain. I got the vibe, but, and even if it doesn't work out at Rotherham, you know, I would rather go off that instinct of yeah, that's the right kind of environment that I think would should suit me. Like, you
when
know?
you talked about, you did your due diligence on the culture at Rotherham. Was that based solely off the conversations with the manager, or what other kind of research did you do?
Yeah, manager and staff and even players. I think I reached out to Chio before signing. But no, I got that vibe off the manager that there's, it's a little bit different here. Like, and then I seen that then first day in the door, like with the people he signs. But again, there's risk with any decision like that. There's risk. You don't know. There's a lot of unknowns. Like, and you could easily make the wrong decision. I easily could have, you know, I was taking a bit of a gamble as well. You don't know everything. It's not easy to judge people either based on a couple of talks or a couple of Zoom calls, you know. But luckily, I'm moving in with that decision.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the manager. I don't know too much about him. I have obviously seen him interviewed, and he speaks in a very interesting way. He speaks about his players in a very interesting way. There still seems to be a very kind of genuine depth of respect there, should we call them, that you actually see, I think, in the really top, in the likes of Klopp and Guardiola. I think he shares that level of kind of respect and admiration for the players that really work for him.
Yeah, it's like compassion a little bit, and that he can see and understand. Obviously, he was a player himself as well, but he's kind of on that level where he understands the struggles and different little bits the players go through, and form and dips and and mistakes. You know, he's good like that. You know, he understands that we're all, your players are human, and you know, yet they are trying their best, and it's complex. You know what I mean? It's not straightforward. Like, and he's, yeah, I would say it's like compassion and honesty that he kind of thrives off. But it's he's top quality as well. He's really, really good. And the backroom staff as well, Richie and Hammy, they're like, and not even on the other side of it, they would focus a little bit more on the technical side of it as well, and you know, analysis and different bits. But his ability, yeah, it's people. It's about dealing with people and stuff, isn't it? Like, and his ability to manage then that whole group is, yeah, it's great. Like, it's really good.
How have you found the step up in terms of standard of training sessions and the physicality and that side of things?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me to compare, and it's difficult. It's kind of difficult to compare for me, and it all depends on position and different bits as well. But for me, in a way, the biggest thing is pure physicality and power and strength. Like everyone is like complete athletes here, like, and which kind of shocked me a little. But I felt like I was probably would have been my strongest point coming from the League of Ireland. Like, my strength would have been, I was strong enough and physical enough. But it's another step up here. Like, everyone, never mind being technically really good, they're all strong and quick and powerful and fit. Like, and that's the main one I've noticed. Like,
yeah, because I saw running stats for Rotherham. Now, they were put, I think it was in November, earlier on this season, where, like, sprint distances, Rotherham had the third highest in Europe or something mad. I can imagine. Like, that's obviously comes from the manager, and that's his demands.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's how he wants to play, the way we press and different bits. And supposedly the pre-seasons are absolutely grueling as well. So I'm not looking forward to this now in the next few weeks.
I was going to ask, so because you've only actually, you know, you've only played, it's such a great moment, but you've only played a few minutes in this calendar year. Will you have a different pre-season schedule effectively?
Yeah, mine's a bit different. That'll last probably get the next three, four weeks off, but I'll probably have a week off now, and then I'll kind of start taking over and doing different little bits. They have, the programs are all individual, like, so mine will start a good bit earlier than the rest. Yeah.
And you've got exams as well this summer, just to add into the mix.
Add into the mix, yeah. Hopefully I'll get them finished up in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, I'll be delighted to get them finished. Jesus.
What's the master's, if you don't mind me asking?
It's in renewable energy and finance in Smurfit in UCD.
Mm. And did you initially take that because you didn't think that you would stay full time in football?
Yeah. Like, I signed for both. And I, as soon as I said, just before I signed, I had, and you kind of have to, because listen, I was going from Bowes. I didn't have a great year at Dundalk the year before. And you have to be kind of rational about the thing. And I had sussed out that was the Masters I wanted to do. And it fitted in really perfectly with Bowes because they were based in Dublin and they were training in the evenings. So I was just like, right, this is a perfect fit. I'll play for a couple of years and then I'll go and try get a job in the renewable industry somewhere. But it's worked out a little bit different now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still delighted to have it. Like, it's it'll definitely be useful.
Yeah. Does it take a little bit of the pressure off your football in a way? Because you know that football is ultimately not the be all and end all, that you've got, you're very highly qualified and you'll soon have those qualifications in the back pocket if and when they're needed.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. Particularly at League of Ireland level and stuff, it's massively important. Like, I come over here and I'd be asking lads, like, do you have anything, or and literally none of them have anything or have any plans. And I just find that a bit mad. But when you're coming from League of Ireland, it's become more the norm now. Like, if you go through squads at home there, most players will be doing something, will be in college, will be doing a trip, like, you know, we'll be trying to, or think, at least thinking about doing something, which is positive. But no, from where I came from, you definitely need it. It's massively important. And you should, just to say as well, UCD and the Smurfit School have been unbelievably flexible for me and helped me massively, like, because I obviously didn't expect to be leaving the country halfway through the Masters, but they've sorted me out and been great. So I'd like to give them a shout out, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking ahead to the championship next season, How are you feeling about it? Like, is there that self-doubt there that you're thinking, God, will I be able to prove myself in the championship?
Listen, I don't want to be thinking that I'm this, you know, I don't know how I came across there, but...
Sorry, yeah, of course.
No, you're right, but there isn't that. Like, it's not like it's suffocating, like, you know what I mean? There's, like, it's more realism, you know what I mean? It's more that I'm realistic, like, if I'm excited for the championship, and if whether I make it, whether I play, whether I don't, there's excitement there. Like it's gonna be really interesting. You could be playing at Elland Road, like, or you know, or whatever. Who knows? You know, it could be mad, and it'll be a good experience. But the doubt is more about me being a little bit more rational and realistic around expectations, more so than it kind of suffocating and me being worried about, oh, you know, am I going to do this? I'm not that worried, as you say, the Masters and everything else kind of helps, where this is more just like a whatever, we'll see how this goes. But I'm not expecting to go and score 20 goals in the championship, if that's what you're asking me.
Yeah. Well, my next question was about international honours. I mean, do you ever... think about it, because look, I mean, there's plenty of players being capped from League One in the Irish squad now. You've played and scored in Europe. You've had fairly excellent goals to game ratio in League One, if we can call it that way. Like, has there been any conversations with Stephen Kenny? Do you ever visualise yourself putting on a green jersey?
No, I don't really. That's something that I know. I understand that at the level that I'm at now and the club that I'm at, that if you do well, you're gonna be in contention, like, and that's it. Kind of comes would come second fiddle to, obviously, to performance. Like, if you can perform at this level, then that could come, and that could be an added bonus. But that's not something that I would be constantly thinking about or looking at. No, maybe that's that self doubt creeping in again as well. I don't know.
We had a couple. I did let some of our listeners know that you were going to be on the show today, so we have a couple of questions in for you, mostly on Bulls, actually. I mean, have you been following their progress this season, and what have you made of it? There's been some early season struggles in your absence, I have to say.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that Bulls have overachieved massively in recent years doesn't help the Keith and Trevor's cause. Like, Bulls still don't have a huge budget, and fans are obviously keep expecting more and more and more, like, which is tough for the club. But I think they're doing well. Like, the transition in players is always going to be so difficult for them. I don't know how they do it every year. Like, you know, we had a slow start last year, and they've kind of had a little bit of a hiccup a couple of games this season as well. But I would imagine once they get in their rhythm now, like, I think if I have been watching, I think they've gone with two up top, I think, Promise and Junior. Like, and if they can get that to work and get a nice balance there, they'll be a real threat. Like, and it'll be interesting to see how teams manage them. But hopefully they can kick on now this summer. They don't have Europe as well, which could be a good factor and could really help them, because it hindered us a little bit last year, our league form. But no, I imagine they'll probably kick on now, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, Georgie, thanks a million for chatting to us. Really appreciate it. Congrats on what a brilliant moment for you at the weekend. And best of luck. It doesn't sound like you'll get much of a holiday this summer, but I hope you enjoy a few days off.
I appreciate it. I will do. Cheers, Gavin.
Thanks very much to Georgie. Very interesting guy, Shane. You would have worked with him at Dundalk.
Watched a hell of a lot of Love Island with Georgie. Love Island.
Why didn't I discuss this with you before I rang him?
Love Island was the go-to program during that week in Portugal.
Georgie and Shane and Casa Amor, what?
Georgie was a big fan of Love Island. We were watching a lot of it that week out in Portugal, so he was.
Was this the Maura Higgins year? Because it's the only real year I know.
2020, was she in it that year, or was she? I'm trying to think. So, I can't remember now, to be honest with you. But
the year of the fanny floater, wasn't it?
he is a fantastic fella. He is an absolutely fantastic fella. I was really, really angry that Dundalk didn't do more to try and bring him back into the fold at the start of last season. Georgie made it completely clear that he would have been very, very happy to come back into the Dundalk setup and give it another go at the, because obviously they'd sent him out on loan. So they had, but yeah, he has so much ability. I mean, I used to manage against Georgie quite a bit. Georgie would have been the main man at UCD when I was managing at Wexford Utes and at Galway, and he was always just such a handful. You'd literally have to alter your tactics to try and deal with him. He's one of those players you'd make kind of special accommodation how we were going to set up for. And he's genuinely just such a lovely fella. Like, I think arguably one of the most interesting things about Georgie, and I think it just sums him up brilliantly, is that when you go to Georgie's Twitter bio, he has the fact that he has a master's in renewable energy and environmental finance well before he mentions that he's a professional footballer. Do you know what I mean? I have a master's in renewable energy and environmental finance from the Smurfit School. Oh, and I'm a professional footballer aside from that.
Yeah,
you know, and that's him, you know.
And will be one playing in the Championship next season, along with James McLean, Will Keane, Jamie McGrath, and the rest of the Wigan Athletic squad. They're up as champions. It means that Troy Parrott, Conor Coventry, and MK Dons will go the playoff route. They play Wickham. Thursday and Sunday those games are? Yep. And then Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday on Friday and Monday. It was a terrific achievement by McLean and the rest of the Wigan squad. David, I know you were struck with the celebrations.
Well, no, yeah, Jesus, I was actually bawling my eyes out watching that, the video that Erdin McLean, James McLean's wife, put up of him celebrating with his daughter, was it Willow Ivy, who has autism. I don't know if anyone's watched it. It's just, it's beautiful to watch. And then it kind of makes you realise, doesn't it? Like, kind of what lads have to kind of deal with, not so much deal with, you know, but kind of you see stuff that maybe a lot of people might not know about them and all the rest of it. And it's just a really nice moment, you know. And then it kind of makes you kind of think, I suppose, what the caption that she put up just explaining how it was nice just to be able to have it as a family together, because like stuff about not being able to have them all in for a kind of a celebratory photo and stuff, and then for that to be there, yeah, it was beautiful to see, really.
I think James McLean's caption on Instagram was, "Life isn't perfect, but it is filled with perfect moments," which is just a lovely way of phrasing it.
I remember this made me feel incredibly old. I remember being in Old Trafford when, you know, I'm a Spurs fan, obviously. I went, it was Spurs against United, David, on the last day of the season, however.
99, when United won the treble.
And was it, yeah. And well, it would have been 99, actually, you know. And David Beckham came out with, they all came out with their kids, carrying their kids. And they had the kids had the headphones on like that. And what's Beckham's oldest one?
Brooklyn.
He got married recently, did he? That's how old he is. I think so, did he?
Bloody
sure, I heard some mention of that. Maybe not. Maybe I'm raving.
Well, if you are true there, congratulations to Brooklyn Beckham on behalf of the football family and all of the 42 members. I'm sure they'll be happy for us to extend our congratulations. Championship is getting interesting now, ahead of the final weekend. Tonight, if you are listening to this on Tuesday, it's worth keeping an eye on Bournemouth against
Forest.
Against
Did
Nottingham
you see
Forest?
Forest yeah. The Forest team getting sent off from the training ground by the fans?
No.
Oh, incredible stuff. Have a little look at it there. Like, obviously, the team coach was leaving yesterday to go down, and there's like hundreds, if not maybe about 1,000 fans out with the training ground, seeing them off with flares and all. Just a reminder of how big. We've been to Nottingham a couple of times for work and stuff. It's just a reminder of how massive that club, that football club is, you know. Really, it's incredible. Like, but yeah, that game is going to be something else. Be mad if Mark Travers. Yeah. Imagine now after a whole season, if Bournemouth drop into the playoffs. Be incredible. They need to get a result, don't they? They just need to get a point, is it? I think they need to get a draw.
So whoever wins that keeps their fate in their own hands,
right,
basically.
Okay.
The goal difference is so tight as well, and Forest are 3 points behind, but obviously it's still in their own hands because they can beat Bournemouth tonight. And then the last round of games in the Championship and League 2 are this weekend. So I was going to raise this just very briefly. It's probably not like the Irish squad is consisted now mostly of Championship and League 1 players. By the time the Nations League kicks off on, what is it, the 4th or 5th of June, you know, some of the squad will have been off a month, some will have been off 5 weeks. Like, that, I think that might become a bit of a talking point as those games come closer, David, because it's not exactly not exactly ideal.
Yeah, it's not. It's a strange one. I suppose it's just going to be one of those, again, we keep on saying this, but like, it's just going to be one of those things where an international manager has to be able to deal with. Like, there's no other way you get around it. It's going to be the same for, say, well, not the same for everyone, because obviously, but I'm guessing it, like, a lot of players will have been offered a fair chunk, you know? Like, they've kind of been used to maybe internationals normally kind of maybe around, say, in September or time or whatever, and it's kind of early into the season and people are still looking for fresh match sharpness then and stuff, but it's just going to be another challenge for the manager and his staff to overcome and to plan for. And you can look at it, will they be rusty or will they have been refreshed? And it's probably the best way of looking at it, because there'll be some players who can kind of probably deal with, like, their bodies, I'd say, will be in bits at the moment, you know, after such a long season, and the rest can just be very important to just actually get rid of some of those little aches or some of those little knocks, and then still keep yourself ticking over. But, like, it's just something that the manager has to deal with. It's part of international football.
Now, this is preface. This is still in the speculation phase. But there is, I suppose, an outside chance that Stephen Kenny will once again have to replace his number three, because John Eustace, who came in March, he's at QPR as a coach, so he's been double jobbing. Mark Warburton, the manager of QPR, is off. His contract's not being renewed. He talked up Eustace as a potential replacement. The Athletic were reporting last week and last week that Watford are quite interested in Eustace as a candidate to become their permanent manager after Roy Hodgson retires. He's obviously played at that club as well. Eustace says he turned down the Swansea job, or he was at least interviewed for the Swansea job last year. Not a whole lot we can say, because it's still in the realm of speculation, Shane, but, like, I mean, Jesus, if Kenny has to go about replacing another manager or another coach.
Yeah, look, I was reading just when you sent through what we were going to be chatting about. The Watford Observer has him as the favourite. Yeah, they're reporting that he's the early favourite to get the job. It's gone beyond a joke. Like, I don't know how does he handle that. What does he do? Like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous how unfortunate he's been. And you can make the argument that, you know, was it the wisest thing appointing a fella who could end up getting offered a club job fairly quickly and potentially finding himself back in this situation. But I'm sure he thought it would take a fairly unfortunate, you know, set of circumstances for it to happen. But to happen this quickly is just ridiculous.
Because I think, was it you, I can't remember, but it was definitely mentioned, sorry, you or Gav, definitely wasn't me, because it was a valid point to make about the fact that this was a risk. You know, and now you kind of wonder what would have been part of the conversations and what would have been part of the discussions that Stephen Kenny would have had with him when he was discussing taking the job, in terms of, like, he would have known of the fact that he was in for the Swansea job and turned it down. He could have easily have, if he went forward with that, like, you wonder where discussions took place where he says, you know what, I don't want to be a manager for another little while. So it's all right. I know we've literally spoken about Bradley and all earlier, but, like, if he's being linked with jobs, that's one thing. But I suppose if they come for him and then he has discussions, then, you know, well, hold on. That's when you do have to wonder and say, well, hold on here, like, kind of, what were you thinking then? What were you going for?
Well, I'm looking here at the moment, and you say, you know, it's only speculation. He's 1-4 to be the next Watford manager. Like, I know it doesn't take a whole lot to make these markets move sometimes, but, I mean, that would suggest that it's almost a done deal. Actually, interestingly, the second favourite for it is Kieran McKenna.
Ipswich manager, who was at Man United. From Fermanagh.
Yeah, from Fermanagh, which is, as I say, that's an interesting one, all right. But, what does he do? Like, what?
It's like Spinal Tap drummers at this point, like, with number threes, like, it's incredible. But I suppose you're taking the risk, like David says, that if you are appointing a guy who's really highly rated and is on the cusp of management, you can't be too shocked if he's so highly rated that he becomes a manager, you know. Anyway, we're still as a recording listener, that still hasn't happened. Mm. We are
just, by the time this comes out, like, this could be already so outdated.
Yeah, I think we better wrap up and get it out.
Definitely so, because my son has just walked into the kitchen after watching Fireman Sam.
And Gav, Do you know what actually just came into my head? I don't know how I didn't think of it when David said it at the time was. Maura Higgins stayed in the same hotel as us when we played Arsenal over in London. A couple of the Dundalk boys got their photo taken with her that day, actually.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Any more stories from that? We can hang on for that, I have to say.
But you imagine that. By the way, it's good to have a say congratulations to Chris Shields winning the league up the north as well, up in Northern Ireland.
Did you see it? Did you see his celebration?
That's unlike him to be so well gone like that, really, isn't it?
It was priceless.
I know, it's very good.
We must get him on. He'd be a good guest.
Duck.
Yeah. Maura Higgins, by the way, was 2019 Love Island, and it is on that bombshell. Will end this week. That listener you can hang in the background is Shane Keegan getting excited about the prospect of watching some Fireman Sam. Okay, that's it, everybody. Thanks very much. David, thanks very much.
No, bother. Take care, lads. Have a good one.
Shane, cheers.
Cheers, Gav.
Do get in touch with us. Join the WhatsApp group. Email gavincooney42.ie. Tweet at gcooney93. We're going to be back again next week. Thanks for listening.